Welcome to Manager Tools. Creating organizational hiring criteria. Part 1. This cast answers these questions. How can I shape my organization's hiring strategy? How do I decide what questions to ask of candidates? How do I connect with my organization needs with our hiring process? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Hey, folks. With 30 September quickly approaching, we realize many of our client organizations, in particular governmental, may have uncommitted budget to use prior to the end of the fiscal year. In the past 2 weeks, we've committed numerous client engagements with the appropriate administrative transactions now, while the actual training will be delivered at your organization's preferred dates in 4Q or 1Q of next year. Let us know if we can help. We have all the requisite acceptance entries into the governmental database that makes it easy for us to work with your organization. Contact Maggie, maggie@manager-tools.com, or connect with us through customerservice@manager-tools.com.
Mark, we've talked about hiring, I don't know, a few times maybe. not like it's an important thing that managers do or something.
Yeah.
But there's more to creating great questions for interviews. You've got to know what and who you want and how to evaluate the answers.
Yeah. Everyone focuses on interviewing. Unfortunately, despite the fact that everyone thinks, interviewing, I know it's important, we're terrible at it. It has always been interesting to me that the most important strategic contribution a manager makes is probably one of the things that, in terms of skill level, they're in the bottom 25%. And to make it worse, you know how you get those quizzes where people say, okay, on a scale of 0 to 10, or, you know, above average, average, below average, rate yourself in these areas. Managers give themselves above average in interviewing, and they're not.
And everybody does, right? Everybody's above the average.
Yeah, it's just the opposite of Lake Wobegon, where everybody's below average. Yeah, it's not good. Now, some of that is the horseman's Christmas rule, right? Hiring is our most important strategic contribution, but we don't do it often enough to learn how to do it well. And so I just realized that, you know, an effective hiring manager, I really focused on a manager in a large organization that had all kinds of strictures and already existing processes and ideas in place. And the other day I was talking about this and basically wrote this show in response to a question somebody gave me. I said, you know, that should be a show, because I've said this 10 times in the last 15 years, and just assumed it would go in the book, or we would have a cast on it. And then I looked and it wasn't even on the cast list.
And people go, Mark, where do you come up with all these ideas? I talk to people.
Yeah, it's 30.
I try to solve organizational and management problems.
Yeah, okay, good. So, outline. The single biggest missing thing in hiring is nobody seems to think that it's important to decide what you're looking for. People just, okay, we're hiring somebody. It's like reaching into a toolbox and grabbing the first tool and saying, therefore, this is the right tool. So you got to decide what you're looking for. Then you got to decide what questions will get answers that will expose that. I mean, you can't just start hiring people and letting people interview anyway. Well, you can, obviously you can, but it'll bite you sooner or later. Then, okay, you know what you're looking for. You know how to ask questions to get at it. Now you have to decide what answers will show evidence of it. I mean, the whole point of asking questions is you want to be able to evaluate the answer. Well, why wouldn't you think about what answers are good or what answers are bad before you start asking questions and help your people understand what they are? And then lastly, you have to capture and promulgate, basically, the results of this kind of work, probably from your leadership team if you're an executive, or if you're an individual manager, from you and your team. You've got to let people know so they can continue to do it. Otherwise, your work will go away in a year or two. People will revert back to the mean.
Yeah.
The mean of actual behavior, not the mean on a objective scale.
Okay, so first point, decide what you're looking for. Now, when I first read the show notes, I was like, what? And then I was like, oh, yeah, because
that's easy for me because I always use the interview creation tool. So I don't even have to think about it. It just seems so second nature. Like, of course I know what I'm looking for. I've gone through a process.
Yeah. When you think about it, though, the interview creation tool, by the way, folks, if you don't know, if you're a licensee to our work, we have an interview creation tool that you can access. It's a series of 64 questions about the relative skills, abilities, traits, and characteristics for the job you're hiring for. You answer those questions on a, you know, a lot, a little bit, none scale. And based on your answers, it comes up with interview questions for you. And it's a little ninja-like. People take it. And I think we've had, probably by now, Mike, I would guess we've had 100,000 interviews created. I may be closer to 75,000, but between 75,000 and 100,000 interviews have been created in the last, I don't know, 10 years, however long it's been out there. And people are just astounded at the quality of the interview questions they get. And it's not just the questions. It comes with a cover sheet, and every question gets its own page with plenty of space for taking notes, and it gives you ideas about how to evaluate the answers and so on. For every question it produces.
Yeah, and there's 64 questions. I had a conversation with somebody about a couple weeks ago about interviewing, and the interview creation tool came up, and I said, you know, there's our tool can help you. All right, there's 64 questions. And he goes, 64 questions? Yeah, dude, if you want to get a full picture of what you should be looking for, there should be 64 questions you're asking yourself. And he was like, I have like two. It's like, okay, yeah. Well, there's probably things that you're not considering.
Yeah. So to be clear, those 64 questions are about skills and abilities. They're not interview questions, but then we have matched interview questions to those skills and abilities, behavioral interview questions, and you get a printout that tells you what to say at the start of the interview and how to use the interview and all the questions. Plus it gives you a chance for custom questions too. Okay. So, you know, you say that helps you decide what you're looking for, but actually it is sort of ninja-like in that you don't really see it coming. In other words, you could go through the interview creation tool, get a fantastic behavioral interview, 10 questions all laid out for you, add some custom questions, and not realize what you're looking for because you're tactically going through the interview process and you're asking these questions. And we'll help you a little bit with the tool by telling you what to look for, good and bad answers and so on. But you still don't really understand, here are the underlying principles, right? You've just been given questions to get at that. And as great as it is, not understanding that rationale, I think a lot of people miss that if you're going to hire people, you ought to have some organizing principles behind that hiring. And I'll tell you what people forget about is the future. Well, you know, okay, do I want this guy to be here, this person to be here for 5 years? Yeah, I do. Okay, what's the world going to be like in 5 years? What do we not have that we need to have? Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah. Look, effective hiring, clearly effective interviewing is part of it. It's the sexy part. Everybody thinks about interviewing. It's the interesting part. But in a way, it's a bit like the plays you would run in a football game, which I say in honor of the fact that the football season's starting here in 2020.
Yeah.
You have to run plays. They're necessary. They're the core of the game and so on. But they're the tactics, okay? You have to do them, and you do them one at a time. But they're not the strategy of the game. If you just have a bunch of disconnected plays, if you just throw things randomly in the playbook and they don't consider the down and distance and the time of the game and so on, if you don't take advantage of your team's strengths, you know, do you have Drew Brees? Do you have Tom Brady? Do you have Dak Prescott? Do you have Ezekiel Elliott? Do you have Christian McCaffrey? Or if you don't exploit your opponent's weakness, whatever that may be, then that's pretty amateurish as a way to do the thing that contributes to your most important strategic contribution for the organization, if you're a manager, and especially if you're a leader. God, I've just been reading stuff lately. It's almost like there's something in the water that all these management people that write and blah, blah, blah all the time say, yeah, the most important thing a leader does is the people he leaves behind, you know, who's running the organization after he or she leaves. You know, I've been saying that for 25 years, just now people getting around to it. It's funny. Okay, so we're saying there needs to be a strategy to inform your tactics. Now, we're not suggesting just any old tactics will do. You got to start with behavioral questions, which are the really good questions. If you're not doing that, might as well just pack it in and go home. Let's put it this way. Depending upon where you are in your journey from, I don't know what I'm doing, to masterful strategic hiring principles and plays, let's be clear that if you look around you in your org and you've got unstructured interviews going on, you've got creative interviews or stress interviews or unprepared interviewers, those things don't even come close to predicting job success, let alone cultural fit, which everyone seems to think is important. Nothing does anything worthwhile compared to behavioral interviews. And so clearly, if you're not doing any of this stuff, even a poorly prepared set of behavioral interview questions will give you better success at predicting candidates that you say yes or no to, whether they're going to work out or not. So if you don't have any of that stuff, don't do this first. Okay. Build a little bit of basics around behavioral interviewing, even if it means it's just you. So you're at least, you're doing behavioral interviews. So that will set an example for your team. I mean, this is another example of how people say, oh, I'm so worried I'm going to be micromanaged. You can't ask for half an hour of my time during the week. That's micromanagement. No, you can't coach me and give me specific tasks to achieve because that's micromanagement. And then these same people go out and they give unstructured interviews. And they really don't know anything about interviewing or what the criteria are, how to probe or what behaviors we're looking for. They've done none of that. And they want to interview somebody. Hypothetically, I suppose there are some people who don't want to conduct interviews, but that's a whole separate kettle of fish. But
well, it's, you know, don't know a good person when they see them, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I am astounded that people seem to think that they're being micromanaged in any way, shape, or form when they are allowed to do any old interview they want. It's not micromanagement to say you're going to learn these questions. It is malfeasance in a managerial and leadership role to let people do unstructured, creative, stress, casual, you know, one question interviews. I've talked to a couple people lately. Somebody briefed them for 2 or 3 minutes and then said, let's just talk. Just brief them at a high level on the job. Let's just talk. As if their work life is so unstructured that we'll just randomly stumble across questions and answers. You'll randomly work into a conversation about my family, about how you had an effective accomplishment 2 or 3 years ago in a role similar to this one. Okay, I'm going to get started and then I won't be able to get out. Okay. So whether you're doing behavioral interviews or not, you know to ask questions to try to get at behaviors, but the question people forget to ask is what behaviors are you looking for? And again, I mentioned the interview creation tool that it's so good at it that people don't realize really in detail or understand or bubble up at a conceptual level. What behaviors are in here? What should I be looking for? If I didn't have these questions, could I describe to people what we're looking for? Could I help them understand? And could we build on our own a system to make sure we got that and we didn't miss when somebody had it or we didn't miss when somebody didn't have it? Well, you know, what are you looking for? What are the examples of cultural fit that you're looking for? What soft skills do you prize? I'm amazed. Some people say, yeah, I'm not that big on soft skills. Wow. Even in behavioral interviewing, if you haven't worked out well in advance what you're looking for, good interviews are going to mislead you some of the time. Good answers to well-structured questions that are examining the wrong behaviors are not predictive of success in your role. Which is totally logical when you say it. Getting a good answer to a well-structured question that are examining behaviors that aren't that important is a waste, are essentially a waste of time and are not going to predict success from the candidate. So if that's true, if we all agree on that, then uh-oh, I guess we better know what behaviors we're looking for. So what that means is, before you create questions, you have to know what behaviors those questions are designed to identify. Pretty simple.
Okay, so how do we go about identifying those behaviors?
Well, I thought I was done with this, Cass. No, it's your turn.
I got questions.
Okay, yeah, okay. So look, you generally want to think about two things, job success and cultural fit. Somebody who can do the job that nobody likes to work with will fail. Somebody everybody likes without the skills to do the job or the smarts to figure it out will also fail. Typically, for most people, if you're even at this level, and this is only level 3 or 4 on a scale of 0 to 10, the mistake that people make is to focus almost exclusively on job skills, leaving out questions that will help you determine whether or not somebody is a cultural fit. Now, an awful lot of managers say, no, I don't ask questions about cultural fit. I just read the person during my behavioral interviewing questions or during the rest of my time and see whether or not I like them. You know, you can do that a little, but in that it takes both job skills and cultural fit to give somebody a chance at superstardom in your role, and you obviously want more of those. It takes both, and I wouldn't want to leave it up to people's gut feel on whether or not a person fits culturally. And so I'm not against, as you'll see, we'll talk about it later, not against having somebody say, yeah, that's part of my cultural analysis, the vibe I got from them. Although let's hope that you don't just say vibe when you get to your interview results capture meeting, but it's not all of it. And it shouldn't be all of it. Not that we use should that often around here.
Manager Tools has listeners in every country around the world. We can't come to everywhere for training, even when there's not a pandemic. That's why we created video versions of our training. If the virtual timing doesn't work for you, you can still be a better manager, better communicator, and hire better by purchasing and working through our video courses. Find out more by going to Manager Tools and look for products in the menu.
So look, if you're an executive, especially, you must ask the question, what kind of organization do I want to build? Because you're building it now with the people you have and the people you're going to bring in. And in fact, that's a great question to ask if you're a manager also. But it's really essential for the executive. Somebody wrote to me the other day and said, Mark, I got promoted to manager a while back, and the biggest distinction I had was, as you've said, he didn't say as you've said. He just parroted us. Maybe he meant that we had said it. I don't know. Which is, I thought that I should do more of what I'd already been doing, when in fact the fundamental part of my job had changed from getting the most out of myself to getting the most out of other people. And I thought, yeah, that's about right. And he said, but now I'm an executive and I don't know how to describe what the transition is from manager to executive. What's the switch that's supposed to happen? And I said, well, you're supposed to get the most out of people for the future of the organization. Executives are responsible for the future of the organization. And if you're an executive, you're supposed to be building an organization for five years from now. 5 years from now. What's going to be the same? What's going to be different? You're not supposed to be filling positions. You're supposed to be providing guidance about what's going to happen in the next 5 years, and then turn that into guidance about what kind of hiring principles you have. An executive without hiring principles is almost not an executive. They're not doing their single most important contribution to the organization, which is shaping the quality of the talent that will be there in the future. This is pretty standard stuff. I think if we had 10 random listeners from the listening audience right now in a room and said, okay, let's talk about it. What do executives do? What should they do? Let's think about the organization and what it does serving society and ask ourselves, how would it devolve from what this organization does? What do the people inside it, what should the people inside it be doing? And sooner or later, the group would coalesce around, yeah, that's right. Somebody's got to prepare for the future of the organization. Okay, so what kind of questions might you be asking to help shape the kind of people you'll be looking for? So, what kind of organization do I want to build? That's the first question. What kind of organization does the entire company want to build, right? Because if you're a division or a group or a department in a bigger picture, if you're just one of the cogs in the system, you've got to fit that into what your company does. What does the future hold? Yeah, you have to start thinking about the future. And heck, it's hard. The people who are really good at being futurists, they're right 50% of the time. How will the world be different in 3 to 5 years? Now, if you've spent your entire life saying to yourself, man, predicting the future is hard. I've never really, you know, just sort of happens to me and so on. You're in for a major sea change. And the question becomes, you're going to discover one of the ways you know you become an executive is you end up having these chicken and egg moments. It's sort of like deja vu, where you decide that in 5 years, there's going to be a lot more artificial intelligence implemented in the Internet of Things. I'm making that up. I'm just saying two technical things that are cool and putting together in a sentence. And so you start saying, hey, guys, unless somebody has some artificial intelligence work experience, I don't want to hire them. Well, 3 years later, you read in the journal that people who have artificial intelligence as it relates to the Internet of Things are a thing now. Okay. Well, you say to yourself, God, did I do that? Or was it just that obvious and everybody else did what I did? And then you have this realization, oh my gosh, what would have happened to us if everybody else would have figured that out because they were playing executives rather than me? I was just a cog in the system. I wasn't pushing the boundary and preparing my organization for the future. What if I was just a cog in the system and I didn't do it? I didn't think about the future. Everybody else would have the people they need and I wouldn't. And by the way, that would be our reputation that we don't. And so there's not already a community of AI people with Internet of Things. People are going to get me back for that. Mark,
dude, that's not a thing.
It is not a thing. Yeah.
Well, actually it is, but anyway.
Yeah. What kind of skills will I need more of? What kind of culture do I want to build? You know, and somebody asked me, Mark, I don't know what kind of culture, what should I build? Okay, what kind of place would you want to work at? And please don't tell me a place where everybody can work from Starbucks on the Wi-Fi. That's not a culture, okay? That's a book club. But look, we have a podcast called The Delta File, and The Delta File asks you to keep track of things that you are going to change when you have a little bit more authority. Things that are stupid, things that the company does that are arrogant or clumsy or mean-spirited without even realizing it, or big-footed or whatever. Or your boss ignoring rolling. He gets something in on Tuesday and finally tells you about it Friday at noon and says, let's talk about it on Monday. You know, because that's exactly what people want, a whole bunch of work to do over the weekend at the last minute. You've already got that if you're keeping your Delta file. You already know what you don't want. It's not that hard to run around the other side and say, okay, what does that mean I do want? Okay, and then the next question is, for that culture that I say I want, what skills or people will help me build it? Now, you notice I didn't just say type of people. I said people. Look, this is where executives, in many cases, bring in their friends, people they've worked with before that share your common beliefs about what an organization should be or how things should work. This is normal. You read all the time on Wall Street because they get more coverage than everybody else. Not in a good way, not because they should cover them more, the newspapers, the Times and the Journal and the Post, the Tribune and so on, but because they are a bigger part of the economy. And somebody leaves Deutsche Bank and goes to Credit Suisse and they take 13 of their team with them. It's part of the deal, okay? That is somebody saying, I'll tell you what type of culture I want, the type of culture I had at the last place. And that was a tacit agreement when they got hired first and got made managing director. That's how it works. And by the way, when I say managing director here, for those of you from Europe, I don't mean CEO or general manager. I just mean in an investment firm, one of the senior people, a partner, if you will. Yeah, so who, not just what or what type, but who would help me build the kind of culture that I want? Now, look, if you're an executive and you've built a strong team of directs and perhaps even skips as well, who are also managers, don't just ask those questions yourself. Turn those questions over to your management team also. Now, I kind of like conversations like this because I want people to hear my thinking. I think a big part of an executive's job is to teach. I would say I'm in the minority. Maybe it's because the nature of my role for the last number of years. You can do this by working on these questions a little bit and then saying, hey guys, in your next staff meeting or series of one-on-ones or whatever, hey, look, I want us to upgrade the type of people we get here. I'm not worried about pay. I think we can get better people without more pay because they're going to want to join us because we have good people. It's fun to work here. And I want you guys to think about these questions. And then next week during staff meeting, I'm going to cut some stuff out and we're going to spend a half an hour talking about this list. I like that discussion. I'm not saying you should like it. You don't have to like it. And I'm not recommending you without question do it. You can either ask everybody to respond by email, right? Hey, look, here's a series of questions. Answer it. Okay. Send me some notes about what kind of people we want more of and different of and the same of in the future. So you can either do it by email or you can get everybody together the way I would. But again, that's not a recommendation. That's just my preference for things because I don't mind having a 30-minute meeting. And because I've facilitated a lot of meetings, I don't have any problem saying, guys, we got 30 minutes. I'm not going to let the conversation get so out of hand that after 30 minutes, everybody's innervated and we're worse off than we started and nobody can agree on anything. Because believe me, if everybody shares me their points of view, we'll end up agreeing. I'll take it back, tie it up in a bow, and say, here's what it's going to be. Some people, though, oh, no. I want everybody to have their voice. But if at the end of the meeting, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, whatever, I don't feel we've reached a conclusion, I don't know what to do. Well, it's your job to reach conclusions, that's for sure. But look, that meeting would lead to a list of factors that your people would send in, and you'd look at them, and you'd probably connect some of them together, and then you'd have to think about, okay, how am I going to communicate that? And you would whittle it down to what amounts to strategic guidance for your management team as the interview. Maybe you decide this is so important and the company is going through a sea change, and so therefore you're going to do two meetings like this. That's fine. Just remember, I don't think I've ever shared this before on air. I hate mission statements, and I hate MSMs, which are mission statement meetings, where you get people arguing about the definition of a word, and is this word better? And let's get the thesaurus out. That's really, really bad. Whenever anybody starts talking about those kind of conversations, it's often somebody in HR. I remind them that the entire directive that General Eisenhower and all of the Allied troops got from Churchill and Stalin and Roosevelt regarding D-Day and the aftermath of the end of the war in Europe 75, 80 years ago was 50 words long. So seriously, if you're a 10, 20, 50, $100 million company, $500 million company, you don't need a list of thesaurus words like collaborate. Now, look, I could do that, but you'll notice I didn't say I was trying to get the group to come to agreement. Okay. Very few managers I know seem to have the ability to work their group into agreement. Even if you try to have two meetings to do it, meetings turn into long sessions with opposing viewpoints, MSMs, too much time spent on one or two points, championed by one or two people who don't get it, that they're not supposed to be in the business of falling on their sword every 5 minutes. I don't like that word. It feels harsh to me. No, that word's not futuristic enough for us. Jeez, wait 5 years. It won't be futuristic anymore at all. Look, we want collaboration. We want input. We want communication, but we don't recommend consensus when it comes to your strategic value for the organization. And we don't recommend democracy because this is not a democracy. Any more that you could have a mission statement meeting for your nation and achieve consensus. You don't do that in democratic nations, sovereign states. So we don't use consensus very often internally in organizations. Take the input of your folks, consider it, and then give it back to them as guidance within a few days or a week.
All right, dude, let's...
I got more.
You got more, but we're going long. So let's stop here. And when we come back next time, I'm going to ask you for an example of strategic guidance that you've seen before.
Oh, yeah.
I think is really good.
I got the bomb.
I guess another question for you. So if you have that, you have a week to think about it. So get on that. So everyone, we'll pick up with this again next week. In the meantime, have a great one. Thanks, dude.
Thanks, partner.
So long.